Welcome to the Golf Podcast, presented by Golficity, where we bring you the tips, instruction, and support you need to get the most out of your golf game. And now your hosts, Frank and Mike.
Welcome to another episode of the Golf Podcast. I'm Frank, and as always, I have Mike here with me. Last week, in our 50th episode, we talked about how to read the greens, and we talked about a lot of tips and clues that you can use that you may not have picked up on before that'll give you a much better idea of the break, the slope, the pitch, all those types of things that go into a proper read of the green. So hopefully you were able to put some of those into action and drain a couple more putts over the last week. Again, all that content comes straight from the Golficity Academy, so I definitely encourage you to check that out online if you want to dig into it a little bit deeper. This week, we've got a special interview for you. We're going to be speaking with Richard E. Todd. He's the author of The Golf Rules, Learn the Rules of Golf by Watching Others Break Them. And his most recent book, which actually just came out about 2-3 weeks ago, is his Golf Rules Etiquette, where he dives into etiquette a little bit more. But what's really cool about it is Richard is a real rules buff, but we don't mean that in that nagging way that kind of drives you crazy. Instead, Richard, you know, helps golfers better understand the rules by going through these engaging and entertaining stories and situations, real life stuff that you would encounter anytime you're out there on the course. And it'll get you thinking, it'll get you laughing. I really enjoyed the books. But I'm sure you will too. And Richard's just a great guy to talk to. And you'll see what I mean in a minute when we bring him on the show. But in the meantime, Mike, you just had the opportunity to play Bethpage Black.
Yeah, it was a very interesting round of golf, Frank. It was a course that it's been on my bucket list, I guess, for a while, you know, living in the area. And finally got to play it yesterday. I mean, this thing was tough. I mean, I like to compare it to, I was telling the guys at work today, I said, you know, compare it to a ski slope that's just filled with double diamond slopes, and that's it. You know, and it was long, and it was a challenge. You know, every green was covered with bunkers just hugging it from each side, and, you know, 450-yard par fours and high rough, big hills, can't take a golf cart. So everything was against me. But, you know, I was a little amped up. It's kind of a funny story. When you get up to the first tee there, Frank, you got all the people waiting to go out, you know, and they stand right about where you tee off. So you have a nice gallery of about 15 to 20 guys just staring at you, your first tee shot. So I was really nervous going into it. But thankfully, I smoked that opening drive right down the middle.
There you go.
Like 275 yards. And I was getting so excited that I shanked my second shot, and I ended up tripling the first three holes.
Yeah, well, you know what? The most important one that mattered, the one everybody saw.
I know. So nobody saw anything else. Well, the guys in my group did, but that's it. But, you know, it's funny because I got up to that infamous par five. It's one of the most beautiful par fives I think I've ever played, and, you know, anywhere that I've seen. It's such a cool and nice shaped par five that's challenging and uphill. And I ended up birdieing it. So triple birdie. So I kind of slowed things down, and, you know, the rest of the round was kind of choppy. But it was great. It was fun. And it kind of motivates me to get out there and play some other bucket list courses, you know, ASAP.
Yeah, and I think when you play a course that challenging, you know, you just let that one birdie stick in your mind. You got to know going into it, you're not going to shoot your best round. But I'll tell you what, it definitely gives you an even bigger respect for the pros and how the caliber and the level they're playing at.
Yeah, you know, that you nailed it right there, because I said that multiple times, even to the guys in my group. I was telling them, wow, these guys play back from that area behind us, and they're firing 68, 67, 65s. I couldn't even imagine what I would score from back there. You know, it's just amazing.
And what's really, you know, another thing that's so crazy, we talk about the popularity of golf, but I don't think there's any shortage in our area, because what, you played on a Tuesday and it was almost a 5.5 hour round midday?
Yeah, packed. Still tough to get a tee time there. You know, course is in phenomenal shape. All the courses in our area are in phenomenal shape. I bet they're like that, you know, around the country. It's just every course I've been playing lately has been amazing.
Well, we've been lucky enough to have a kind of a milder summer here, but we're just trying to sneak in whenever we can because it's getting dark early. And I was trying to get out there today, but I didn't get a chance. It was raining, overcast, but I'm glad you're able to play. That definitely check that one off the bucket list.
Yeah, so I'm done. I'm actually going to hang up the cleats for the year, Frank, I think.
I don't believe you.
No, well, I broke my 9-iron at Bethpage Black. It snapped right off the head.
Really?
Yep. I have no idea why, and it was a long conversation with TaylorMade, but that's a whole nother story. So I don't know. Maybe I'll hang it up, but maybe you can excite me to get back out there one or two more times.
I'll tell you what. You know how many times I've heard that, too, of that happening? And that's exactly why. I mean, talk about etiquette, rules, whatever you want to do. It may sound silly, but when it comes to safety, that's why I never take a practice swing directed towards people, because I have seen club heads fly off so many times and almost kill people more than I've seen, you know, somebody get close with a golf ball. It's you got to be careful with that.
Yeah, it was strange because I didn't chunk it. I didn't hit a tree stump. It hit right off, you know, compact of the ball, right off the tee. And it was a par three, and the ball ended up making it to the green too. It was like a 168 yard shot and both snapped off. So a 145 yard shot. But hey, now I'm down a club, and by the time I get a new one, I don't know. We'll see. Maybe I'll jump right into my off season workout routine early.
Yeah. Well, you know what? That's a new set of clubs, so hopefully they'll replace that for you.
Yeah.
I know we've had that happen a couple of times with the pings and stuff, and they replace them no trouble. But yeah, so I'm excited to talk to Todd today. I mean, Mike, you're probably the same way as I am. I mean, there's so much sometimes with the rules of golf, and we're as golfers, especially as amateurs and guys who are newer to the game, we get that basic concept of the game and of rules. And there's definitely, without a doubt, a lot of flexibility that comes into play when you're playing these informal type of rounds. And that's what I really want to talk to him about, because I like his take and the way he makes it fun and interesting, because nobody really wants to, and this is what I want to get his take on. We'll talk to him in a second, but nobody really wants to be that rules guy who's always breathing down everybody's, like, especially if it's there's no money on the line, it's not a competition, and you're that guy who's saying, no, you got to go back to the tee box and you got to hit it from here or whatever it may be. So there's a certain politeness to it too. I mean, especially, like I said, look, I'm the first one to say, if you're competing against each other, absolutely, you got to level the playing field by everyone playing by the same rules. But if you're just out there for fun and you're keeping your own score, they're keeping their own score, who wants to be that guy? But there's also a lot you can learn. And if you know the rules, you can also sometimes give yourself a better advantage, because of the fact that far too many times I see when people don't quite understand the rules, they almost penalize themselves worse. Like, they don't realize there may be some places where they could take two club lengths and they only take one, or whatever it may be. Or they may give themselves a penalty of both stroke and distance when they only need to take a stroke because of, you know, maybe it's a hazard that's outlined, you know, with the red stakes versus the white stakes and all that type of stuff. So you don't want to sell yourself short either. So let's just dig right into it. Let's bring Todd in on Richard in on the show. Sorry, Todd's his last name. I abbreviated that there. But let's bring Richard on the show. Let's talk to him a little bit about that, and we'll dive right in. Okay, so like I said, we have Richard Todd on the show. Richard, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much. Glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'll tell you, start with what I'm not. I'm not a PGA professional. I have no club affiliation and no holes in one. I am a high handicap lover of all things golf related. I've been playing for over 30 years and a person of very few interests, golf being one of them.
So what specifically got you so interested in the rules aspect of the game?
Well, I'll start off by taking back about 5 years ago. My son was graduating eighth grade, getting ready to start high school, and he decided he wanted to be on the golf team. So that was a great summer because I took him out a lot to the course where we were practicing. You know, I told the wife, hey, I've got to take him out so that he can get better, and helped him along. And during that time, I started to attempt to reread the rules of golf. Anybody who's ever picked up the little white book from the USGA realizes that it's a tough book to get through. And by no fault of the USGA, that's their intention, because it is a legal document that millions of dollars are on the line every weekend because of that. So I'm reading through this, and I get to the chapter on tending the flagstick. And flashback again, I'm 16 years old, and the first time my dad took me out with his friends. And, you know, it's one of those very exciting times as a child when your parent takes you along. You know, you're feeling very very mature. And so we're at the course. I manage through the first tee jitters, keep the ball in the fairway. And I'm on the green, and I'm starting to settle in for what I think is going to be a great round. In order to do my part and impress the old man, I'm tending the flag stick. He's a little off the green, and he skulls one, and it's screaming right at me. So I pick up the flag stick, and he starts yelling for me to drop it back in because he's hoping for a little backboard action to stop that ball. Well, of course, that doesn't happen. The ball goes over the hole, across the green, and down the hill. And that's when he starts letting me know in a very loud tone how happy he is that I'm there that day. His friends and everybody on the course. So I carried that terrible golf guilt for 3 decades. And in reading the rules of golf, I realized for the first time, I was right, he was wrong. Yeah. Once he addressed his ball, he needed that pin in or out. It's not one of those where we'll leave it in if I need it, pull it out if I don't.
Right. So a little bit of redemption, if nothing else.
It made me feel good. But at that same moment also, I realized that I was not taught well the rules of golf, despite my dad being a scratch golfer and playing for years in himself. So I thought, people have to learn a better way than from somebody else that doesn't know in the first place. So I'm thinking this story explains tending the flagstick perfectly. I wonder if I can come up with any more stories through my experiences over the years. And as I'm reading through the rules, sure enough, I'm saying, oh yeah, I experienced that. And I'm thinking of the situation. And then the idea comes to me to string all these stories together into one 18-hole round. And at that point, you know, I start doing all the background information. I go to the USGA rules schools. I'm actually taking writing courses, looking for publishers, the whole marketing aspect, and writing every week and getting it done. And that's how that started.
Well, I tell you, and that's the thing, when you first hear it, maybe say, well, picking up a book on the rules, you think, well, that sounds boring. Who's going to want to read that? But I'll tell you what, I was incredibly engaged reading this because I love that idea of the layout, how you go through each one situationally and then afterwards break down what the rules are, because it's so true. So many times, these are the exact situations that we come up with and that we experience when we're out on the course. I mean, how many times, you know, you go out with a group of guys and then you're kind of decompressing afterwards, you know, what the ruling might have been. Because, and I think the point you hit on is something that so many of us can relate to, and that being that few of us have actually really picked up and dove into the actual USGA rule book. So many of us have picked it up through the years by playing with other golfers, whether it be, you know, a parent or just with some buddies or just going out there and just being teamed up with other people and just hearing from other people, well, this is the ruling on that. And that's, and a lot of that does, it's like playing telephone. It gets compounded and we end up confused and it's not the right thing. And I think one of the biggest challenges, especially for newer golfers, is a lot of times they're playing so informally, they're really not concerning themselves with the rules until that moment when all of a sudden they really wish they knew the rules, when it's maybe a little bit more competitive, maybe they're playing for some money, maybe they're playing in a amateur tournament or a pro-am or something like that, and they don't want to look silly out there. So I really like the way you've structured this because it's a way to kind of absorb those rules without that mundane reading through, you know, rule 14.5A says this, that, or the other thing. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, I do. And even in reading the rule book, I was amazed at how much I didn't understand until I went to USGA rule school, which for those that haven't heard of it, it's 4 intense days of going through that little white book. We're talking 9 to 10 hours a day, and it's just, we'll say grueling because it's difficult. The last day is a 4-hour exam on the rules. Most people do not finish the test in that time.
Wow. That would take a lot of coffee to get me through that, I'll tell you.
Yes, and when you're, so the class is, like I said, 9 to 10 hours a day, and generally when you're done, you go back to your hotel room and you study for the next day, trying to keep up. I didn't cram this much in college.
Well, let me ask you this then. I mean, what would be, and trying to put myself in the shoes of somebody who maybe is maybe newer to the game or whatever it may be, and they're out there and they're playing, and they have an interest in it and they want to understand the rules, but there's kind of that, and sometimes there's that peer pressure where other people are just kind of playing their own game. And again, maybe money's not on the line or whatever it may be, and they don't want to kind of sound like that nitpicky guy who's always chasing everyone of saying, this is the way it should be. And is there a way to kind of not quite approach it that way and get more out of it? Because the way I think, and you may agree with me, is that actually knowing the rules can come to more of a benefit to you, because you can actually, in certain situations, I think people end up penalizing themselves worse than they need to because they're not quite understanding it, where those, there are those areas in the rules that they can almost help themselves out a little bit if they know it better.
Absolutely. The rules are not just penalty, but there are quite a number of benefits. And sometimes those benefits get a little gray in areas. Cart path is a big one that most people don't understand. And kind of going back, I love using my dad because, you know, he's been golfing for 50 years. And like I said, at one time he was a scratch player, and he still doesn't understand so many of the basic rules. He called me up this summer and he was talking about a round he was playing with, and his chip shot embedded right off the green. So his ball was half stuck in the ground. Mm-hmm. He said it took him 3 strokes to move it a foot. And I say to him, why didn't you just pick it up? Because you're allowed free relief from that situation. The rule book actually says, if your ball is embedded in any, and I do the air quotes, closely mown area of the course, which is another word for fairway. Mm-hmm. So instead of hacking at it and moving it a foot, he could have just picked it up and moved it to the side and then chipped it on, no problem. But his answer is, I didn't know I could do that.
There you go. Right. That's a that's a perfect example of how that the rules can actually benefit you in knowing them. Yeah.
And to answer your other question, I often tell people when they play a certain way and you know it's wrong, you can, you know, especially when you're just playing a friendly game, you say, hey, nice shot, but if you want to know the rule state, you should do this. Mm-hmm. And explain it in a different way so that at least next time they will continue with the, maybe hopefully the right way, or if somebody ever asks them or watch them, you know, because especially you're talking, golf is a cradle to grave sport, so that person could be playing for another 60 years.
Right.
We started talking about the cart path, and almost everybody I know always drops the ball on the fairway side if their ball is on the cart path. And for the newer player, if your ball is on the cart path, you are allowed free relief to the closest point of relief, which will depend if you're a right-handed golfer versus a left-handed golfer, what side the cart path is on the fairway, you know, if it's bending. And the real fun part is you can get free relief off of the cart path and end up right behind a tree. Mm. Your relief is not from the tree. The relief is from the cart path. So at that point, you've got 2 choices. You can hit off the cart path, or you can hit into the tree and have to go around it and take an extra stroke anyhow.
Right.
But that's always fun.
Yeah, be like Phil Mickelson hitting it off the cart path and doing better than we would if it was in the fairway, probably.
Exactly.
So now talking about the other side of the coin, which the two go very much hand in hand, but your most recent book is on etiquette. And yes. Here's an area where especially I think that a lot of golfers can benefit, because I think a lot of people shy away from certain areas of the game because they're concerned about how they might look or how they might be perceived, not knowing the etiquette. And one big place that we see that a lot are people who are actually maybe they play once or twice a year, and the times that they'd go out there and play is when their boss invites them out, or they go out because, you know, it's a charity event or something like that. And the most important thing that to them at that point is that not wanting to be embarrassed and wanting to kind of understand that etiquette. So, you know, talk a little bit more about that. And what about you, you know, how the book dives into different areas?
Well, it's funny you mentioned a charity event, because, as you know, that's the premise for the second book, The Golf Rules Etiquette. The main character is a municipal golfer, and he wins a round of golf at a country club for a charity outing. And now he knows that he's going to really have to step up his golf manners for this event and goes about reading and studying so that he doesn't look like a fool when he's out there. There, the book lists 243 different nuances that seem simple to some people, but others just kind of blast through them. Is the small items such as, you know, picking up your tee and fixing your divots, or fixing other people's divots, standing in the way of those driving or putting, standing right behind them trying to get a line on the break.
Right.
It's not the most etiquette thing to do, is stand right behind somebody. It's almost a little cheating.
Or walking through their line. There's just countless things that are going to get you in a little bit of hot water out there if you don't have at least a basic perception of them.
Right. And again, it goes back to, where did they learn golf etiquette? Probably from somebody that didn't know what they were doing. And in most cases, I think if you have somebody like that in your group, you know, you just show up at the course and you get matched up with two or three other people, you probably won't go to the effort to explain the right way to behave. You'll just think, in 4 hours, I don't have to see them again.
Right.
But that person is going to repeat that same problem again, possibly for decades, and maybe ruin the sport for another person. We don't need any more people leaving.
So besides handing them a copy of your book in the parking lot, what's the best course of action, would you say, in a situation like that? Lead by example, you know, try to point it out if it gets to be too much. What would be your advice?
Oh, absolutely. Take the person aside, just kind of whisper to them a little bit that, you know, there's a better way of handling that situation. In the book, one of the characters gets real mad after a bad shot and slams his driver into the ground and messes up some of the teeing area. And another person just calls him out on it and says, we don't behave that way on the course. And, you know, it's a real shocker to some people. And they're like, okay, yeah, I get you. I actually heard a story this weekend at a lot of my author events. Everybody's got a golf story. And it's amazing, some of these that you hear. But about a 55-year-old guy comes up to me and tells me about the first time he threw a golf club, you know, a little par three, and he put it in the water. And that's where his club went. He threw it out into the pond. And his dad looked at him and said, go get it. Mm-hmm. And he never threw another club.
Right. Yeah, he learned his lesson. And one thing I think that, and you might agree with me here, is that a lot of it, when it comes down to etiquette, especially with people you maybe haven't played with before or whatever it may be, a lot of it just comes down to simple communication. Even not, you know, when you're talking about, yeah, where you have to maybe confront someone, but just kind of communicating what simple expectations are before you even get started. I mean, something as simple as just saying, you know, we're going to play ready golf, and you know, or is everyone in agreement there, rather than taking it upon yourself to bypass the normal honors system of teeing off or something like that, because that's where I see a lot of little confrontations happen out there, where people kind of just, as I said, take it upon themselves to do whatever they want to do, and where just a little bit of just, you know, person-to-person communication and just getting everyone to agree of how you're going to proceed can really smooth things out from an etiquette standpoint.
Yes, that's pointed out before the round begins in the book. Another couple ideas are, let the rest of your group know your golf level, your handicap, so they don't expect you to be hitting the green in regulation. So they know that you're going to put a lot in the woods. And I've got bad eyesight. So when I drive, I always make sure somebody else is watching my ball. And there's a great etiquette item. It's not required, but when your group is there and you're the only one watching your ball and it goes into the woods, well, guess what? Now everybody's going to have to wait. Right. And that doesn't mean the three people you're with. It means everybody behind you for the rest of the day. And that's one of those great areas in the book too. It shows one person said, it's not my ball, I'm not watching it. And they end up waiting, while another one knows exactly, says, you're at the base of the third tree on the right. Mm-hmm. And it just saves a lot of time for everybody in the group.
Absolutely. The pace of play being so important. We constantly talk about that. So yeah, and I think that's an excellent example right in the beginning of ways that, as I said, if somebody's a beginner golfer and if they're looking to kind of they're not be embarrassed out there and kind of diffuse that possible tension, be it with the rules or with the etiquette, is even just to disclaim that much. Then, and it kind of makes it easier for someone then to, where they might hesitate otherwise, to point out the rules. Maybe there's somebody who you're playing with who's been playing for 50 years and they know the rules, and you could learn a lot from them by just, you know, when you first step up to the tee, just telling them, hey guys, I'm new to the game. I'm just learning it. I'm just learning the rules. So you're not going to offend me. By all means, point it out if you see that I'm doing something wrong.
I totally agree with you. And the rules, you know, they don't a lot of people like to change the rules for themselves. And to me, I just don't understand that in a big sense. Think about playing Monopoly. How many times, if you landed on go to jail, would you look at your look at the people you're playing with and say, you know what, I'm going to roll over. You know, let's not count that one.
Right.
It's just part of the game. It doesn't make you a better golfer or a worse golfer. It just happens. And if you look at the pros, you know, we've got tour people scoring 16 on a hole. It happens. Mm-hmm. So if for those of us that only play a half dozen times a year, you shouldn't expect to shoot 70 or even 80 or even 90. What do they say? Only 10% of golfers break 100.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's the thing. I think so many people get wrapped up in that and wanting to do that, that they bend and flex and here and there. And that's where some of the excuses start to come in. And you hear people disclaiming, hey, I'm not a pro. This isn't the tour. Don't worry about this. Don't worry about that. But there's still a lot of other areas where you got to understand of keeping that playing field level. I mean, it may be just around that you're playing on the weekend, but if you're going and then entering that score in for your handicap, and then later on, that somehow affects the league that you play in on Thursday night. You know, it does compound each other. So keeping that everyone on the level playing field. And it also, I think what it does too, is it where rules and etiquette work hand in hand, is it doesn't put others in that bad situation where someone is kind of, maybe they're irked by it. They don't want to necessarily say something, but it's bothering them that you're not, you know, you're not putting them in that situation where they have to say something, that you're not following the rules because you're taking it upon yourself to kind of bend them and flex them as you see fit.
Right. Right.
All right. So that's a lot of great stuff. And I know, I mean, we could, between the two books, we could go on with these stories for all evening because there's so much in here. And what I was really amazed by is just the idea that you were able to uncover 200 faux pas, as you say there. It just shows you how much is really happening out there on the etiquette side of it. But you know, aside from that, is there anything else that you have? Any other stories that you want to share for the listeners?
Probably. I'm sure over the course of your different shows, you've touched about mulligans and out of bounds, but those are always great ones to point out to people. You know, the mulligan doesn't exist. It's that do-over that everybody likes to have. But guess what? You get a do-over because you have to hit again from the same spot. Just right. Count your first stroke, count your second, your penalty stroke, and just move on. Like you were saying, it gives you a firm handicap, so you know where you're at. Because really, at the end of the day, the only person you're playing against is yourself. I know right after reading the rule book, and when I started to get serious about that, my score went up tremendously because I was following the rules. Mm-hmm. But I knew that score was more accurate than that lower score that I had, you know, in the past years. You know, it just made me feel better, and I knew where I was at. And then you can work to improve from there. If you really can't live with yourself shooting a 95, get some lessons.
Right.
But other than that, it just was. You know, if you went out to any baseball field and you end up against the bat against some major league players, you're going to strike out. Are you going to beat yourself up about it? You expect that to happen,
right?
So,
and you're not going to give yourself a mulligan in the tee box, in the batter's box either, and say, you know what, I get four strikes. You guys may get three, but I get to take four. Yeah, it's so true. And you know what, honestly, it feels that much better when you do hit your goals of maybe it is, like you said, breaking 90, and you know that you did it without taking, you know, mulligans and this, that, and the other thing. So there is a lot of reward to it on the other side, and you do feel good about it. It's challenging, like you say, in the beginning, and you'd really have to bite your tongue, especially if you're holding yourself tightly to the rules, and maybe your playing partners or your buddies who you're out there with are scoring well, but you know that they're not quite playing on that same level from a rule standpoint. But like you said, it's really just you against the course out there, and that should be the only score that matters. But yeah, there's so much that goes into it. And one thing, just kind of going back to what you said, that's the reason too, with those tee shots that may go, you know, out of bounds, whatever, play those provisionals, announce them and play those provisionals, because that's what's going to keep the game moving along. And that's what's going to really keep you more legit on the score, because far too many times, you know, you're not sure if it went out. You go all the way up to, you know, to your ball, you're looking for it, and everybody's trying to help you. And then you kind of determine it must have went out, but then you say, well, the next group is already on the tee box behind me. The Rangers wants us to move along, so let me just drop here and take a stroke. Well, you know, that's not really what you're supposed to be doing. So you got to play those provisionals, right?
Right, right. And for everybody's ego, there is no problem with letting a group behind you come through, especially in a situation like that. If they were in front of you, you'd want to play through too, as opposed to holding them up, especially if that person is actually going to come back to the tee box and hit again. And that makes everybody a little uncomfortable. You know, that second shot, when you have even more people watching you, it's harder to keep that one in the fairway.
Yes, it absolutely is. And you know what? That just reminds me, I wanted to get your take on this. I know we're kind of running long. I want to wrap it up in a second, but what I wanted to get your take on, because it's one big area of etiquette that personally, for me, I feel like I run into every time I'm out there, and that is the idea of playing through. And you feel like there's some people who are great about letting you play through, and other people, they won't even look back. They're not going to let you play through. So what would you say for someone who maybe is newer, and because they're newer, maybe they're a little bit slower, or they're with a group or whatever it may be. What would you say is the best indication of knowing when it's the right time to let someone play through?
Watch the group ahead of you. If you have three holes that are open in front of you, and regardless of really how fast you're playing, if the group behind you is playing faster, they might need to go through. Just this last holiday, I went out and was playing around by myself, and I finished in an hour and 15 minutes. I was a little winded by the time I was done for nine. But if somebody was coming up behind me and they were playing faster, I'd let them go through. Because you don't want them waiting for you, you know, feeling that pressure to hit. Right. And so that would be my take. And as far as stories go, like you said, we're running out of time, but I hear a lot of great stories at all of these events. And I wanted to share those with people too. So I started writing an e-books called Short Stories from the Long Links. And that's out in the Kindle Market, Volume 1. And every time I go to another event, I hear other stories, and I just keep putting them together and adding on to that. So it's if you're looking for something a little lighter than the rules and etiquette, check that out.
Yeah, who doesn't enjoy a good golf story? That's for sure. Yeah. Okay, so what is the best way that our readers can find out more about you, can get access to the book, and what would be the best way for them to do that?
Of course, everything's out on Amazon. You can also find the books and a lot of information about myself on my webpage, thegolfrules.com. I'm on Facebook at thegolfrules.com, Twitter, YouTube. I've got a blog out on WordPress. So there's a lot of places.
So you'll probably get a tweet from me next time I'm on a cart path. I'll send you the picture and say, where do I put this ball?
Yes.
Okay, so Richard was also great enough to donate a couple of his books, and even his most recent book on etiquette, which just came out a couple weeks ago, and he's autographed those for us. So what we're going to do is we're going to give those away. And the way we're going to do that, talking about golf stories, is jump on Golficity. You can go right to this episode by going to golficity.com/episode51, and there's a spot there where you can leave a comment. So leave some of your golf stories there, some different rules, things that you've faced and you've come up against. And we'll kind of try to start a discussion about that and see, you know, what was the best approach, or maybe what you thought the ruling was at the time, kind of like what Richard started off saying with that initial story with his father when he found out years later what the real ruling is. I really want to hear that. Like I said, we love hearing those different types of stories. So post your stories of different unique situations that you were in and the ruling, maybe, like I said, at the time that you thought it was, or maybe you found out later. We want to hear those. And what we'll do is we'll pick out a couple of the best ones and send you a free copy of the book. So Richard, appreciate that. We appreciate you donating the books to us. We appreciate you coming on the show. We appreciate all the stories for sure.
Thanks so much for having me on. It's been a great time.
All right. So I want to thank Richard again for coming on the show and being so generous to donate the books. Definitely jump on, like I said, golficity.com/episode51. That'll take you right to the show notes for this this episode. In the show notes, I'm going to include, you know, links to his website, ways to get in contact with Richard through social media, like we talked about, and also links to his books, which, like I said, I really encourage you to check them out because, you know, I have the same impression going into it. It's like, this is a book about rules, a book about etiquette. How exciting could that be? But once you pick it up, and I think even on Amazon, it lets you thumb through some of it, and you'll get to get an idea. It's really kind of, it's fun. It's engaging. It goes through different stories, and it's so relatable. I think almost every situation that he talks about in the books is something that I've run into somewhere in the past. And it just gives you a lot of like very interesting things that you can kind of work into conversation when you're out there playing yourself. And like I said, if somebody is going to be, and they're nervous that they're going to be playing in a more serious event, a local pro-am, a local, whatever it may be, or a charity event, and you're not sure, and you want to make sure you're not embarrassing yourself out there, this is a great way to know those most important basic rules and really look like you understand the game, and you're not going to be embarrassed by feeling like you did the wrong thing out there. So I definitely encourage you to check that out. Again, it's golficity.com/episode51. Mike, do you have anything else before we wrap the show up?
No, I didn't have the heart to, you know, break it to Richard that I broke every rule on the course yesterday on the black course. So, you know, literally, I mean, mulligans maybe once every couple holes, you know, fixing my my lie. You know, I had no choice, but I didn't want to tell him that.
Yeah. Well, like I said, I think there probably is a whole different set of rules when you go onto the Bethpage Black and the first thing you see is that big warning sign saying right. This is for extremely, was it experienced golfers only?
Yeah. I should have listened.
That's... Could have saved yourself 5.5 hours and some greens fees, but no, I'm kidding. It's like I said, bucket list thing. That's something you'll remember forever. So, okay. So that's everything we have. Like I said, check us out on the web at golficity.com. You can also connect with us on Twitter at Golficity or on Facebook by just searching Golficity on Facebook. You can find us those ways. A lot of ways you can interact with us. Next week, we're going to be back. We're going to be talking about another topic that kind of everybody runs into, and we're going to talk a little bit about what to do when you run into like that frustrating round, kind of like what Mike is saying here, and how to kind of bounce back mentally from that. It's a very important topic that we see a lot of people run into and struggle with. So we're going to talk about that next week, and we've got plenty more coming. In the meantime, check out golficity.com for hundreds and hundreds of articles covering all the most important aspects of how to improve your game and how to really understand the game. We've even got a top 10 list on there about etiquette that we did a while back, and just talking about different areas of etiquette things that seem to be broken all the time, and you can kind of learn them and really know what you're doing out there. So check that out. We'll be back again next week. And in the meantime, I want to thank Richard Todd again for coming on the show, and thank you for listening. We'll see you next week.